currently over 200,000 students on strike in Quebec, trying to stop the Charest government tuition hike of $1,625. There are demonstrations, blockades, and occupations happening almost every day. Tune in to Off the Hour weekdays on CQUT from 5 to 6 p.m. for the Red Square Report, ongoing news and analysis on the student strike. For more info or to get involved, email news@cqut.ca.
If the kids are united, they would never be divided. If the kids are united, they would never be divided.
Welcome back to Off the Hour here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We go now to an in-studio roundtable discussion on the student strike in Quebec. There are currently over 200,000 students on strike across the province. On March 22nd, students and their supporters filled the streets in a historic march. Hundreds of thousands of people are taking part in the march. It was followed by a week of economic disruptions and direct actions against state institutions. On tonight's panel, we will be tackling the question, what next for the student movement? We are joined here in the studio by a panel of student and community activists. Here with us, we have Alex Matak, an undergrad student at Concordia who has been active in the student strike. Rushdia Mahreen, a grad student at Concordia and a member of the group Free Education Montreal. Jaggi Singh, who is a member of the CLAC, or Anti-Capitalist Convergence. Philippe Maureen, who is a member of Professors Against the Strike, and who also active in the 2005 student strike. And finally, Jerome Charoui, who was also active in the 2005 student strike.
All right, so to get the panel moving, actually, Jerome is on his way down to the studio. He just got off work from Cégep Maisonneuve. But for the panelists that we have here in the studio right now, Christine kind of outlined the context that we're at now, hundreds of thousands of students coming out into the street on March 22nd, a whole week in Montreal this week of direct actions, economic disruptions, yet the government has refused to budge. So let's start off with that question of what next for the student movement. And I don't know if either Alex or Rushdia, if you guys want to kind of tackle that. Where do people have to go now at this context that we're at? You just got to get right in there into the mic.
Well, there's a lot more to do. We'll continue the economic disruption that started last week. I think we made a great mark on the population of Montreal, at least, if not elsewhere in Quebec. And there are a number of events lined up. We do have two major demonstrations planned next week. There is one in Sherbrooke, which is the Manifestation Nationale. So it's like similar to what happened here in Montreal on March 22nd, but that's in Sherbrooke. There is another big one planned on 4th of April, that's on Wednesday. There are quite a few other manifestations planned, so similar to what happened last week. And then on Monday, the 9th April, we have the huge, huge, in French, it's Grand Rassemblement Populaire, so it's popular... how would you say
gathering
that? Yeah, it's like open forum, basically. Okay. Open forum towards the Quebec Spring. So this this aims to bring together different facets of the society in Quebec. So different unions, community groups, feminists and environmentalists. So basically, the idea is to go for the full Quebec Spring with all social movements in Quebec.
Did you want to add something to that, maybe, Alex?
Yeah, I think we just have to keep pushing and keep escalating wherever we can. I think I know personally I took great pride out of watching the SPVM and everyone run around the city this last week, like cats chasing a bunch of really riled up mice. That was really great, and I think we need to keep doing that. And I also think we, those of us who are in universities or cégeps or whatever, have to keep... applying that pressure at a smaller level in our institutions as well, because and not lose track of that momentum there.
Just in terms, we're talking about some actions that are taking place and still being planned for the near future, but maybe Philippe Maureen, just in terms of numbers, at this point in time, are as many people involved, active, and on strike as in the days leading up to the big March 22nd demo? in terms of numbers?
It's a bit hard for me to tell. I think, like, we know for sure that the student strike in terms of numbers of schools affected is the strongest so far, like, in the history, modern history of Quebec. I think some students had, like, strikes didn't have to go to school only for the 22nd, but so maybe a peak was reached on the 22nd with, like, around 300,000 students, which is, when we think about it, it's really a lot of people, you know. It's, and now we're probably more around 200,000 people in most places. I think in every cégep that was on strike on the 22nd, the strike, like, votes have been won so far, like last week. So in universities, and it's in some places it's different. I'm sure Christine and Alex will talk about the Concordia case, but the movement is still strong, and definitely at this time it's stronger than it was in 2005. So that's a great improvement, and yeah, so that will bring us to ask the question, what's next now after so many weeks of strike? But it's not over, far from over.
And now, talking about the strike, there's also the issue of repression, student repression. What kind of repression have students been facing by faculty or security officials or from police?
I guess I can speak to that a little. At Concordia, we definitely have seen a sort of new face come out of administration recently. The provost, David Graham, issued a statement on behalf of Concordia, and Bram Freeman, I guess, as well, saying, just basically saying that anyone who is participating in, well, blocking anything, which was basically implicating anyone picketing or disrupting classes of any kind, would be charged under the code of conduct, that all faculty should call security on these people, that they're, if they refuse to give their names, they'd be photographed and they'd be charged later. This has also meant that Concordia has hired a bunch of what we call affectionately the Men in Black. These are private security officers who now sort of just patrol campus constantly with their earpieces and refuse constantly to identify themselves, give their names or their license numbers, even though this is on camera. I've, you know, numerous times of people refusing to identify themselves. At the same time, that has added a lot of pressure onto faculty. So faculty members themselves have started calling security those who, I mean, there are definitely some who are very supportive and have refused. There's a statement going around where certain professors have signed saying they refuse to take those measures, but it definitely is applying pressure to those who are sort of more on the fence. And it's epically increased tensions between students themselves, and it's led to a situation I can speak to. I'm in geography at Concordia. There's a video that hopefully a lot of people have seen now on YouTube of a girl who's actually a McGill student who was helping with a geography picket, was hit by one of the Men in Black, one of the private security officers. It's captured on film, sort of. You can't really see it, but you can see the hand come in. And if you read the comments underneath, they're really, I mean, I don't suggest anyone read them because they're completely frustrating, and there's a lot of "she deserved it" kind of comments. So it sort of highlights how this new stance from the administration is perpetuating a lot of hostility between students as well.
And is it dangerous or in any way more troubling that the security that's used is private hired security compared to police? What does that say to you?
Totally. It's really troubling. The Concordia security, I mean, these are people we see every day. They let me, I don't know how many times I've locked myself out of my place of work, which is on campus, and they've come and let me in. And, you know, these are people that we have rapport with, but the private security, you don't know who they are. They could just be any dude in a suit, and they're all dudes in suits, that's standing there intimidating you and filming you. And also there's no personal connection between the two of you, so there's nothing stopping them from that kind of behavior, whereas with the Concordia security you can kind of be like, hey, I see you all the time, like I always chat with you while you're smoking on this side of the hall building, so maybe we should ease up a bit and don't lock for instance, sorry, I'll make it quick, but there's an instance when students took over the admin building And the Concordia security guards were going to lock us in. And because we knew, some of us knew them, we were able to talk to them and be like, this is a really bad idea to physically lock us into this building with chains. And they didn't. Whereas if they were these private security guards, I don't think we would have been able to talk with them like that.
Do you think this repression is going to slow down the strike?
I don't think so, actually. It sort of had the opposite effect. I think the first day after the statement by the provost, there was more people, I can at least speak to geography pickets, but more people showed up to be present than ever, pretty much. And since then, there's been a lot of solidarity between striking departments and a lot of people who, for them, it was almost like a tipping point where if they weren't active yet, they were now.
I want to open up the discussion a little bit. It's interesting and important to hear about what's been happening at Concordia. But I mean, maybe to look at the strike in a bit of a wider social context, there's been several grassroots community activist groups who just signed a statement in support of the class and of the student strike in general, and also of the economic disruptions that have been happening. We have here Jaggi Singh, who's a member of the CLAC, just one of the groups who have signed this statement. So I'll put the question out to you first, Jaggi, and if anyone else wants to jump on it as well after, go right ahead. But why is it important to look at the student strike from, I guess, not only a non-student perspective, but just a social movement perspective in general here?
Well, the demand for getting rid of the tuition hikes is a very specific demand to students, but it's a microcosm of a broader battle against neoliberalism. If you look at the message, the placards, the signs, what people were saying during the large demonstration on March 22nd, it wasn't simply we want lower tuition and get rid of this hike. It wasn't simply also free tuition. It was a broader fight back against neoliberalism. People who are 25 or under have basically lived under neoliberalism, basically lived under this agenda of privatization, of service fees, of basically user pay. And, you know, might not be familiar with this whole battle that took place in the 60s and 70s and 80s against the entrenchment of neoliberalism. I'm sort of one of the people, Philippe, as well, that come from the generation of Quebec City 2001, which was a battle against neoliberalism, which was a battle against privatization. So for many of the community groups that are supporting the students, that are participating in the demonstrations, that are lending tangible solidarity, we see this not simply as incidental to the struggles that we engage in day to day, but as something that is part and parcel of the battles that we've been fighting for a decade and that some groups have been fighting for many decades. So it's really not too difficult to come out in solidarity and tangibly support the week of economic disruptions. Also, I think it's worth mentioning that there's an element of being inspired here. I mean, it's not every day that you have 200,000 to 300,000 people take the streets. It's not every day that there is a public call for economic disruptions. And this escalation of tactics, I mean, we're in the midst of a very crucial moment in the strike, because it's clear, and CLAS has laid it out very clearly in their communiques. There's a clear strategy here, which is that there have been petitions. People have asked nicely. There's been a mega demonstration. There's been everything that you're supposed to do in a so-called civil society to try to change the mind of a government. So the only thing that's going to work now is economic disruption. And it's easy to say, but it's actually quite a radical tactic. There's quite a bit of repercussions involved. And so I think it's important for community groups to come out and support those groups that are engaging in economic disruptions. The space has also opened up during strikes for broader discussions. And that's one thing we've pointed out in the statement that was released by, it's now been signed by approximately 24 community groups. The space opened up to talk about Plan Nord, to talk about non-status folks, to talk about neoliberalism more in general, to talk about the kind of society that we want. These democratic spaces are opening up within the student movement, but they provide a model for it to open up more broadly. So these are all reasons why it's actually quite easy to come out and say we're going to support the students. And also we have a role to play in the struggle more broadly against capitalism and against neoliberalism.
So beyond just being a good example of a fight against privatization and neoliberalism, we're just joined here in the studio by our last guest, Jérôme Charaoui. Welcome. So if anyone wants to answer this question, it's open. But why specifically is the fight against tuition hikes such a good place to start for that broader fight against neoliberalism?
Well,
I think we also have to remind us that, I mean, the organization that launched the strike and, like, has been mobilizing for, like, months and maybe over a year now, Class, does not have, like, its only... It's demand. It's not only like fighting tuition hike. It's also for free education. It's also in what was Jaggy was talking about, like the fight against neoliberalism. It's part of the whole demands. So of course, I mean, it's obvious that for students, like tuition hikes are bad. If I can speak like on like just related to my job as a teacher, tuition hikes also. It also changed who will be able to attend university and CEGEP. It will also change the way the relationship between teachers and students who see themselves as customers, as clients, and who want to be treated that way. So, so yeah, if I speak as a teacher, it's not only about like the price that people will have to pay and the debt, which is a huge issue on itself, but also it also changed the whole structure of the transmission of knowledge in the society of research. So just as that's a big deal, and that's why like many people who are not students should be concerned. But it's also definitely like was said before, like in the fight against neoliberalism. So that's why, for example, being active in attendance committee actually our priority is to struggle with the students, because different social movements know that if the students being 300,000, 200,000 on strike, if they can't like change the mind of the government, like who will be able? So this is a crucial point in, I wouldn't say in history, but definitely in this decade. So that's why everyone who cares about like changing this economic system and this political system has to get on board and help out with the student movement.
If I could answer to that quickly too, I think also like that's what Philippe just illuminated was like really awesome. And to me, it has a really deep, I mean, it seems like a logical place to start, because when we talk about what is neoliberalism, what is the foundation of neoliberalism is to commodify everything, to turn everything into a commodity. And when you sort of look at the rhetoric of that's entrenched in this new budget towards education, which is also entwined with things like healthcare and things like that. It's language where we are users who have to pay our fair share. And I think before we go any further, we have to be able to stomp down anything that considers education a commodity where we have to pay our fair share. And so
which is not fair to begin with.
Right. Which first of all, fair to who, but also, when you have a society built on knowledge that has accumulated since the dawn of humanity, since when does suddenly that the access to that knowledge become a commodity that some people pay their fair share to get and some people are excluded for? So to me, this is a very simple platform for taking the foundation out of neoliberalism and the logic of neoliberalism.
One of the things I'd like to add around this discussion is the fact that if some people sometimes ask, where do these ideas come from? How come we're talking about neoliberalism in the context of the student movement? I think it's an interesting question, because ASSE and the broader, more militant section of the student movement hasn't been something that's been established 15 or 10 years ago with a platform that's now finally being able to come to fruition, or the work of a few illuminated leaders. I think one of the things that's important to remember is that one of the characteristics of the more militant section of the student movement is that there's a really big importance placed upon general assemblies and the ability to take decisions in a democratic and grassroots way. So I think one of the reasons these ideas are coming to the fore is that people have been able to express them in democratic spaces, and they've been able to debate these questions, and collectively they've said that yes, these are things that should be discussed, these are issues that should be brought forward, and that's what we're seeing right now.
Maybe I could address a question to Philippe or Jerome. You guys were part of the 2005 strike. What are some of the lessons you learned a few years back from that strike?
It's difficult to speak just for the whole of the movement. I mean, I think different people have different ideas around these things. It's that General Strike's work that they're able to really bring pressure to bear on the government. I think we're seeing this clearly in the media, in the streets. The lessons that were learned also is that you can't really trust representatives to negotiate behind closed doors with the government. The result of the 2005 strike is a shining example of that. And one of the results today, how this is being seen today, is that federations don't give themselves the space to do the same things now because lessons have been learned in 2005. So I think that's one of the things that's been learned, among other things, of course.
Philippe, would you like to add anything to that?
2005 was amazing. Personally, I was a student at McGill, so my experience was definitely different from the one of Jerome, who was, I think, like definitely on strike, on a real strike. But also, I think the biggest lesson is that yes, it's possible. Yes, you can win, but you don't necessarily know when it's going to happen. Like just with the public inquiry on construction and corruption, like it took months for people like petitioning and writing letters, and there was not even economic disruption. There was no strike, but 2 days before that, the government changed its mind. It was promising that it wouldn't change its mind, you know? So we, like, maybe, government is gonna do an offer like tomorrow or 2 days from now or a week from now or 2 weeks from now, but, there's a clear possibility of winning. And, so that was a good lesson of 2005. I don't want to repeat what, Jerome said, but definitely what I see, the student movement now, I guess the militant student movement, is way more organized than it was. It has learned many lessons of 2005. I mean, there was a lot of actions in 2005, but never there was like six demo in the same day, you know, like we've been witnessing like this week. There was a day where there was like an occupation in Sherbrooke, Rimouski, Quebec City, like three in Montreal in the same day. Like this should be like a month of action, you know? So things are going pretty fast and the movement is still strong. So I think the biggest lesson, like I sent an email to my student telling them like the only like strike you lose is the one that you stop too early, you know? Mm-hmm. So hopefully people will also have this lesson and we'll probably see the end soon because it just can't last for more than a month. I hope. In Mexico, they had a student strike for 9 months, but we'll see what happens here.
Are there any dialogues happening between students who are part of the strike then and now?
I think there is a dialogue, I mean, between leaders, I suppose, in some way. But one of the things that's different this time around is that issues around unity of the student movement, issues around tactics and strategies that should be placed, that should be taken, are debates that are really strong within people taking part in the strike and taking part in the general assemblies. So I think there's dialogue between the different opinions of how we should lead the strike and the way that we should lead the struggle. But I think one of the things that we can see with the weeks that have passed is that more and more people are leaning towards the more militant ideas being discussed, and we clearly see the results in the streets.
Philippe mentioned something like this can't go on forever. I want to hear maybe from Rush Dia. Do you think that there are limits to the strike or not? Or what are the possible limits?
Well, I don't want to like put words in Philip's mouth, but from what I understand, he was saying that the government can't sustain us striking for that long. Mm-hmm. So they have to respond soon. Students, I think they are ready to go as far as it goes. like the exam time is coming and people are still on strike and we are continuing. So in terms of, you know, like the university can't have double cohorts, so they have to make sure that we finish our session before the next one starts. That's one. And the amount of, you know, the resources of the university that are being used, like universities and CGEPs and everything. So like there are a number of reasons why the government can't go on and on with this standstill. So they have to come out and like talk to students.
Right, because publicly in the media, they're saying right now that there's absolutely no way that they're going to change their mind or anything. But maybe as a last question, do you think that privately they're actually quite nervous and impressed at how big the student movement is?
Well, you only have to listen to what business organizations, some politicians, the police, and mainstream media are saying. There's quite frank discussion in the mainstream papers about the impact of this. So if it's sustained, clearly they're going to get worried. And Lynn Beauchamp today said there's no way, like she'll only open up negotiations if all the student groups coming to negotiations are willing to accept the hike, and they'll negotiate more loans and stuff. And that's been rejected by all the student organizations. But clearly, chambers of commerce, municipal politicians, police, and others are really, really worried about this impact. And they'll be that much more worried if other parts of society start joining in. I mean, Avios workers were immediately like sort of company went bankrupt and they lost all their benefits. Air Canada pilots wildcatted. These are for independent reasons. But imagine if links are made to other social struggles. That's being made by students up in Saguenay who are going to be supporting locked out workers and aluminum plants up there. So if we can ratchet up that and start making those links, then we can win. Barcelona right now is an inspiration. It's been an inspiration historically, but it's an inspiration right now if you look at the general strike there. So that's why a lot of these community groups who initiated the statement are so compelled to sort of come out and in favor of economic disruption, because the media, police, etc., are going to play divide and rule and talk about how this is divisive and this is disrupting people's lives. And it's important not to play in to divide and rule and get behind the people who are blocking ports, occupying offices, blocking bridges, blocking highways, and engaging in other tactics to win this this demand and open up space to claw back capitalism and neoliberalism that's being entrenched by every government.
So any last things before we close up?
People should check out Bloc en Laos. It's stopthehike.ca. They've done a great job. That's one thing. Maybe I don't know if it's different from last time, but there's been an amazing job to put out info in English. Not that there's any obligation to do so, but English speakers have no excuse to not know what the more militant organizations are doing, because they've put out excellent information in English. There's a tactical translation team. So check out www.stopthehike.ca, which is the English version of Bloc en Laos, which has all the information about who's on strike, a lot of materials that you can share, and info about the different actions that are coming up. That would be what I would add.
And I would add, just coming from my position, one thing that has been really useful is if there's anyone listening who is an alumni of any university, especially particularly in, I would say, McGill or Concordia, where there's been all this hyped up security and repercussions for strikers, is a really effective thing to do is to start telling the university that you won't give them any money as long as they, until they take back these sort of measures that they're taking. I think another thing that's awesome that's happening that might be on YouTube soon, hopefully after the weekend, is someone has started filming picket lines and the discussions that are happening between people that are being sparked by these picket lines. And it's actually really amazing. I know, as someone who's been on them for a month now, the conversation between people who are firmly against you in the beginning, when to see the way that plays out and the arguments and the way that people come around is really powerful. And if that could happen, if more people who maybe aren't exposed to these things every day could see those conversations, they might understand why these tactics are happening and why it's important to have that moment of conflict where, no, your day-to-day life can't go on the way it always does, and hopefully you'll understand why. And so people should look for that on YouTube. I'm not sure what it'll be called, but
once again, thank you, Alex Matak, Rishtia Marin, Jaggi Singh, Philip Marin, and Jerome Charoui for taking part in our in-studio roundtable discussion on the student strike in Quebec.
You're listening to CKUT. We'll be right back.